Okay, I think we're ready to start. So, today with Polly, we will be doing suffixes and then a bunch of translation, hopefully. Okay, so we've dealt with the true indeclinables are the nipata, which we've just been through, these prepositions or these words that are, you never decline them. They're stuck in there and they affect the meaning as we've seen in various ways. Sometimes connecting, sometimes providing specific types of meaning that can only be given with specific words, time, place, etc. Now what we're going to look at is suffixes. But these are specific suffixes that turn roots or some sort of formed construction into an indeclinable. So you put this end on the word, and that end is indeclinable. Now, it's kind of why I say they're not really true indeclinables, because this is kind of a declension. You've changed the ending, right? You put this suffix on, and you've given it an ending. And as you can see, many of them are just alternate forms of the various declensions. So it was better to look at them in that way, I think. But okay, so we have four groups. Do, which should probably be... Yeah, I guess do is the first one. So the first group, do, is actually just a declension that can be 4-1, 5-1, or 6-1. So it gives one the... If you look at the meanings here, you're taking these words. Sabba is an adjective, right? That means all. So sabba do is from. Do is common for... Do is actually more usually 4-1 and 6-1, but okay, so it can be 5-1 as well. So we have sapato, anyato, anyatrato, itara. So we're looking at these words, anyatra, itara, eka, umba, para, etc. And you put to on the end and it means 4-1, 6-5-1, or 6-1, as you can see in the list. The second group ta ta ha dha dhi hing hang hin chanang wa. Yeah, it shouldn't be ta, it should be tra. It's confusing there. That's a mistake, it should be tra. Tra tha ha dha dhi hing hang hin chanang wa. We had to memorize these. So you put tra on the end, tha on the end, ha. Ha dha dhi hing hang. But, you know, ones like hing and hang, they don't, you can see they're only used in very specific cases. Tra is more common. None of these are terribly common. Tha is common, but only in cases like tatha, in that. So these are the kind of words that you should memorize, really, to know what they mean. Like sapatra, you should know that means in all. Anyatra, in another. Yatra. None of these are all that common, to tell you the truth.
Vanti, isn't pra a Sanskrit letter? I mean,
yeah, it's funny, no? It's a carryover. It's rare, but in this one case, T and R do go together, tra.
And then you pronounce Tripitaka and Tipitaka.
Yeah, mostly the R is removed. This is one example where it's not. Okay, sorry, I'm just looking up. There's something missing here. It looks like he got a little... this was a Finnish man who did out this textbook, so I don't think we always understood each other perfectly. Okay, so the third group should be a long A, that's right. Okay. It's funny, he got a bunch of these wrong. Okay, now it makes sense. Da dani rahiduna ta chanang chachu. Yes, that's how I remember it. These ones are seven. 7-1. And he doesn't have them here. Number 2 gives 7-1, but... right, okay. So the third group, I'm just going to put them in here. The third group is 7-1 as well, but it is specifically regarding time. Okay, apologies. That is now the third group. Examples. All right, Express is doing interesting. No, he's got that wrong. Doesn't Express doing? The fourth group is added to verbal roots, so it's here it's in regards to doing. But it's not always in regards to doing. So you have katawe. This the root here is kar, which means to do, or in regards to doing. So the karma root. So if you add tawe on the end, tawe is in order to. So if you go somewhere in order to do something, for example, he went to the forest in order to do, etc. You'd use katoe. You'd put it in there. Not very common, but has its uses. If you add tung to the end, this is not common, but it is used often. You know, it's not in every paragraph, but this you will run across katung to do something. This is the infinitive form. So if you go somewhere to do something, right? He went to the forest to do work, right? You add tung. And this form is also used with, or often used with, is able. So when someone is able, you use the person sakoti. So bhikkhu katung sakoti. The bhikkhu is able to do. You'll often find it paired with the verb that means is able. Tuna, also rare. Tuna, tua, tuana are all the same. Most common is tua, and we've seen that several times already, having done. That's how we translate it in English. It's not exact, but it works. So it's used in sequence, having done this, having done this, having done this. Finally, he or she did this. So all of these, they're not terribly important, but it's good to know about them because we will come across them. You have to be aware that there are certain words that don't follow the ordinary ending patterns. They have their own endings, and those endings have specific meanings. Okay, I think that's enough for that. We've now finished the indeclinables. Next we have to do numbers. Hopefully that won't be such a big deal. Maybe next week we'll just do numbers and then get right back into translation. And then all we've got left is verbs before we run out of stuff to study. And there's more to study, it's just not in the textbook. Or do we have kita? Kit in there?
What was that, Bhante?
Just looking down to see what we actually have in the textbook. No, we just have... akayata, which is verbs. So, after verbs, we'll need new material. In the meantime, we will be doing Chakupala.
There's the link for Chakupala.
Does anyone remember where we got to last time?
Yeah, we didn't get too far. Still on the first page.
Did we finish that second big chapter, paragraph? I don't think we did we?
I think we were somewhere in the middle of that second big paragraph.
Yeah, I think we just got finished saying why he named him Bala. He named him Bala because of the great Vanapati, the lord of the forest, that was protected by him. Yes, was protected by him. Bala, Balitang, Atana Balitang. Because he had gotten the boy dependent on the lord of the forest that had been protected by himself. So that ends with, it's the page 3. It's the paragraph beginning with Atasa. Atasa Nachiraseva. We finish that sentence. Then we have the next sentence, Saga Basa, and so on. And then the next sentence, next sentence. We're now on the sentence that starts Sa Aprabhagi. I can even highlight it, I think, right? Do you guys see that highlighting right away?
Yes.
Okay, so the key is always go sentence by sentence. It's easy to get overwhelmed by a big passage unless you just go sentence by sentence. You can always rely on being able to, well, for the most part, be able to rely upon sentence by sentence. If you really can't get a sentence, that's when you look for context. You start looking at other sentences, and it's kind of like archaeology or whatever. You're finding clues and so on. Okay, sa is what? Is that masculine, feminine? What's it referring to? Anybody? No one knows what sa means?
Feminine.
Yes, what is the declension?
One. It's the third person pronoun, isn't it?
It's one. Is that what you said?
Yeah, one.
Yeah, so it's the subject of the sentence. It's the third person pronoun, da, which becomes so for the masculine and sa for the feminine. It means she, yes. So actually, before we translate that one, we should look to the second word. Or once we come to the second word, we realize we have to pull it out, because this is we were just looking at para, I was just typing it out there. Para means other, apara means yet another, bhaga is portion, but here it's time. Apara bhage means, and the a on the ending makes it a 7-1. So this is time. So we actually have to pull this out. How you would know that, it's a tough one, because bhaga doesn't have anything to do with time, except it's colloquially used to refer to time. Bhaga means portion. But this means after yet another portion of time. So we pull this out and we say, how did I translate it? After some time, yeah. Apara, I think, means yet more time. After yet more time. She. So then we start on the actual sentence and say, she, what did she do? And go to the very ending, that's where you can often find the verb. Labi. Labi is a odd form, but it's past tense. So the E on the end gives you the clue that it's a past tense verb. Lub is the root. Lub means to gain, in regards to gaining. Lubby means gained, past tense. So she gained. What did she gain? Well, you look right before the verb to find the object of the verb, Buddha, and Buddhang is 2-1, right? And then right before Buddhang, we have another word, Anyampi. Can anyone tell me what Anyampi means?
Aniyam, illegitimate.
Sorry?
Illegitimate, aniyam.
No. Anya is a word that means other. Anyang is an adjective that corresponds with putang. It's a 2-1 form of anya. Pi is a indeclinable that we've just studied. It's a nipata, which is often found stuck on the end of words, like a barnacle. And it just means verily or yet. So here's a yet another son, is sort of the meaning here. Anyampi putang means yet another son. She gained yet another son. Become familiar with this pi on the end, because it yampi, umpi is very common. Anything with pi on the end is right away you should think that pi is just an emphatic participle. Very, very common. We'll see it again and again and again. Okay, so after some more time, she got another son. Now we have a difficult sentence because we actually don't have a subject in this sentence. PM, you mean afternoon? Or Prime Minister?
Yes, Bhante, afternoon. And Purvabhaga is AM.
Yeah, because that's the portion of the day afterwards and before. Okay, so this next sentence, difficult. Only really difficult because we've got no subject. But okay, we can find them. We can fix this, because this is actually the first clue that we have here as to how to solve this sentence is to split it up into parts. So not only do you work with one sentence at a time, but you work with one part at a time. And you can usually stop when you come to something that ends with dwa. So here I'm going to highlight the first portion. Okay, so here we have someone doing something, having done. Katwa means having done, or having made in this case. But we still don't have we don't have anything in the sentence about who did something, and this is common in Pali. You just don't have the sentence. So we assume that it's the person in the previous sentence. In this case, I don't think it is. In this case, I'm pretty sure that we're referring to the man. Because why? Because he's the one who gave the first name. So we're talking in this sentence about giving a name, so I'm betting it's referring to the man, right? The earlier one was, the Sethi made the name Bala. So in this one, it doesn't really matter, but and it's a question of gender dynamics and so on, obviously. It's kind of sexist to immediately assume that the husband was the one able to name the kids. But technically, from a point of view of a Pali grammaticist, we're not concerned with that. We're just wondering, because we're going to run across this a lot, who was the actual subject of the sentence? I'm betting not because of any gender dynamics, but simply because the husband was the one who made the first name. It's not important here, but in certain instances, it might help us figure out the sentence. So we're going to bet that it's the husband is the subject of the sentence, because this means having made the name, right? Nama is name. So what did he make? He made the name. And here we have tassa. Okay, we have to be clear about what's going on in this sentence. Chula baloti is a quote. The T on the end makes it a quote. So you have to take that as a specific word. The whole quote is one specific part. Tassa isn't in the quote. We don't know that. It actually could be, but by the context here makes it clear that it isn't. So namankatwa means somebody made the name, and tassa is the name of him. Because you can't make the name tassa chula palo. It doesn't make any sense. You made the name of him, so tassa means of him or his. So tassa, or for him it could be. Yeah, it might be easier to say this is a for one tassa. So, because the tassa doesn't come right before the thing that is being possessed, so it's probably more for one. They made the name Chulapala for him. So for him, Chulapala was the name he made, or she made, whoever made the name, or gave the name, in, we would say in English. So Chulapala, we've seen above where they did it with Palo. Chulapala is a 1-1 form. It's how you talk about what you named someone. It's just the way they do it. Put it in 1-1 form. It's an entire sentence in itself. It's in a quote. The quote is denoted by the word ti on the end, the iti, which is turned into ti with sandhi. Okay, is that clear?
Definitely. Not really. I mean, it is, but it's just, it's confusing.
It's not easy. This is Pali. Okay, so let's recap. We have the subject is, let's say it's the Seti, the rich guy, and he's having made, we don't worry about that part, this is just how they say it in Pali, because we're not done with the list of things that he's done. So the first thing he did is make a name. He made a name, tassa. Tassa means for him. I will say it's a 4-1 form of ta, which means, in this case, of or for him. So he made the name for him, and what did he make it? Chulapala. So chulapaloti is just a quote. When you are referring to the specific word, you say, you put it in quotes. It's a 1-1 form. It's just how you do it. Okay. It would be very difficult if we didn't do it this way. We separated out this way, and we've saved ourselves a lot of headache just by separating this sentence into two parts. So now, having completely forgotten about that part, you know, don't have to touch that part again, we go on to the second part. Except it's the same subject. When you have katwa, katwa, if you have the twa, twa all the time, it's always going to be the same subject. So it's the same person, whoever it was. I'm betting it was the rich guy. So whoever it was made akasi. Is past tense. This is now a real verb ending the sentence. It's the final thing that he did in this list of things that he did. Also just the second. Akasi comes from the root kar, but you add an a on the end, on the beginning for past tense, and si is an irregular ending, but it's a past tense ending for kar. So this becomes akasi, means he made nama, he or she made the name, and then it's the same formation as the first part, right? Can anyone guess what this means?
Well, the asa on itarasa, that's the 4-1 of the masculine, right?
Itara means, yes, masculine. Itara means other, right? Means the other, I think. For the other. So this means that the other guy, we're talking about the one that they already named Bala, and they've got a problem now because they're calling this guy Chulapala. So to solve that problem, they call the first one Mahapala, to distinguish them. You couldn't have Bala and Chulapala. They had Chulapala, so they have to change the other one to distinguish him to say he's Mahapala. Maha means great, Chula means lesser, or it's not necessarily chula is not necessary. Chula means smaller, could mean smaller. Maha means bigger. It's not that one was less, was inferior. This doesn't mean inferior. Maha and chula are, it's interesting. Maha and chula are when used as opposites, do not denote inferiority. They denote size. If it was Maha and Hina, right? We know Mahayana and Hinayana. Those are two opposites that do actually denote superiority and inferiority. But in this case, no. Chula and Maha just refer to size.
Like the word Mahatera?
Yes. Yeah, that would be a good... But then we have Maha and Anu, actually. Anutera means ordinary Tera. Or lesser, actually. But it's also not inferior. Anu just means smaller.
And it also means younger, Bhante?
Chula is not really younger. But yeah, maybe. I mean, in this case, that's obviously the sort of thing it's referring to. But yeah, you have in the suttas, you have shorter, right? The shorter suttas, you have the Mahavagga is bigger. And the Chulavagga is smaller or is minor, more minor. So it's points that are of less central importance, potentially, but not inferior. Just kind of more miscellaneous, the Mahavagga and the Chulavagga. And then that sort of thing. Maha has many different meanings, many different connotations. It can mean greater and better in that sense. But it often just means bigger. I mean, the connotation is younger. I don't think you'll ever find a literal meaning of chula and maha as younger, older. But that can be the connotation.
Thank you.
Okay, next sentence. Te here is the subject of the sentence. What does te mean if it's the subject of the sentence?
You?
Could be, but no, not as the subject of the sentence. As the subject of the sentence, it would be tuang. The subject of the sentence, this is a 1-2 form of ta. It means they. So given that we have they, we already have the subject, we go right to the end of the sentence and we look at bandingsu. Ingsu is another past tense form. Past tenses are really, really not much fun to deal with, but the problem is we have them a lot because we have stories here. So we're always dealing with past tense. Bandingsu. Bandingsu means were bound in this case. Okay. If we look at the second word here, vayapatte, we also have another time that we have to get rid of, so this one can come out. This means at the time. The A on the end is 7-1. It in this case means at the time. It's 7-1 referring to time. Vayapatta. Vayapatta is a compound. Vaya means age means age. Patta in this case, it's a past tense, a past participle that means attained or reached. So vaya patta means reached an age, or we would say in English, came of age. When they came of age, so they, at the time of coming of age, but in English we would say when they came of age, they became bound, bandingsu, What did they become bound? They become bound, and here we don't have something, or they were bound. This is a verb that refers to someone becoming something. So they became bound. Garabandhanena. This is not a subject, an object of the verb. The verb doesn't take an object. They are the object. They became bound themselves. They become bound, and what is this? What form is this one? The garabandhanena.
The 3-1 form.
Yeah, this is a 3-1 bandhana. Bandhana. Gara means household. Bandhana is the same as bandingsu, right? And this is common in Pali. Good to point this out. You'll see verbs where the object, in this case it's not the object, but it might as well be, or it has the same sort of, the same idea, the same method here of repeating itself. So they became bound by the by, right? Ena is by, became bound by the bonds. So they'll say this in Pali and it becomes awkward in English because we don't do this. We don't repeat. We don't say someone becomes bound with bonds. We find that to be, repetitive, superfluous.
Redundant.
That's the word I was looking for. So they became bound by the bonds of the household. It means they got caught up in household life. So when they came of age, they became bound by the bonds of the household. Yes, this is a very Buddhist way of speaking, right? We're obviously dealing with authors who were monastics because this is how they look at lay people. Not they established successful careers and etc. etc. No, they got bound by the bonds of the household. It was quite refreshing, no, to read. Says the monk.
The dusty life.
Or they could have said bound by kilesa.
No, I mean the meaning is they got caught up in lay life. So we're really summarizing their life. There's no interest here in actually delving into the sorts of things that they did for their life. It's basically giving us a summary of what happened before our story takes place, because we want to know what we're dealing with here. Is we're trying to get some story, and this is quite common. We're giving a backstory as to how Chakubala became a monk. You know, we've got this story about evil intentions, when someone acts with evil intentions, and our story is going to be about someone who gets accused of having evil of doing something evil, and the Buddha says no, because he had no evil intentions. So it has to, evil only comes from evil intentions. And Chakupala was someone who that happened to. So we're giving his story as an example. Okay, but right now we're dealing with him being called Mahapala. He's the older one, by the way. That's our hero. Aprabhage, we've already had this word, at another time, or after another portion or another period of time. And then we have mata pitaro. This is also 1-1. This is plural. Oh, no, sorry, 1-2. This is plural. Because pitu is irregular. The 1-2 form of pitu is pitaro. This means plural. But here we don't have multiple fathers. We have the word mata pitu. Mata means mother, pitu means father. So when you put them together, you've got two things. So this is common in Pali. It can also be, when we deal with compounds, if we ever write that part of the textbook, compounds, these sorts of compounds, it's called a dwandva. Dwandva, or in Pali, I'm not sure, but in Sanskrit we call it dwandva, which means two and two. Sanskrit, Pali are funny this way. Their terms for things are actually usually examples of the thing they're trying to, the thing that they name. So dwandva is actually a dwandva compound, two and two. So this is the kind of compound where you stick two things together and it means A and B. So if you took this apart, it would be mata cha pitu cha, the father and the mother. So when you put it together in a compound, it's mata pitu, but because you make it plural. Now, what I was saying is it could either be plural or singular. There are times where dvandva compounds are singular, even though there's more than one thing. So if you have, we have this compound pata jivarang, which means robes and bowl, two things, but it's singular. Pata jivarang is one thing. It's actually multiple things, but it's singular. The word is uses a singular declension. Here it uses a plural. Should use a plural because there's more than two things. Mata pitaro means the mother and the father, or we would translate as their mother and their father. Their mother and their father did something. Angsu is a past tense ending plural. We just saw ingsu, right? So ingsu and angsu are both the same ending. Yes, like namarupa. And namarupa is an example of it being singular, even though it's two things. Nama and rupa, but you say it namarupang. It's one thing. It's singular, even though there's two things. Okay, so here we have a verb. This is actually two words. Galang akangsu. Galang is one word. It should be a nigihita, not an M. That M there has become an M through sandhi, because we put these two words artificially together. They shouldn't be together. It's not a compound. It's just the way, it's just sandhi. You know, make things sound nicer, put them together. Galang akangsu. It should be galang akangsu. Galang means time. It's the object of the verb. The verb is akangsu. A is the past tense prefix. Gangsu, angsu is the suffix. The root is kar, which means to do or to make, right? I'm dealing with this root again. Akangsu means they made, or they did. Yeah, they performed an action. What did they do? They did gala. What does gala mean?
Time.
Gala means time. So what does this mean? They made time? They did time? Does anyone have a clue what this means? Nobody has to guess. Yes, they died. This is the euphemism in Pali for when someone dies. We would say they made an end to their time, right? We would say in English they made an end to their time. In Pali you just say they made their time. They completed, you might say, they completed their time. They died.
So we've apparently skipped a lot in this story.
Yep. All the unimportant stuff. We're hurrying up into when he becomes a monk. That's the only important part of the story.
We have a similar thing, Lord Bhante. It's called Kalakriya. That is death.
Sorry, Kalakriya?
Yeah, Kalakriya or Kalakriya.
Yeah, that's Pali. They use that as well. Kriya means doing. So doing, it's just a different form of the root. This is when you use it in a sentence. They also say the same thing in Thai, the kalakiriya. They will say that as well to mean death. But that's literally Pali. It's not Sinhala. Sinhala is just so awesome that they use Pali words.
Actually, we say Kalakriya. I think it's more Sanskrit.
That's right, yeah. Which is another... Have we argued about this yet? Why do Sinhalese people use Sanskrit when they're Theravada Buddhists?
No idea about that.
Yeah, I mean, Sanskrit is, I guess, more technically perfect, right? Pali is kind of imperfect.
I guess this is Sanskrit is more beautiful.
Well, then the question is, because these were the Pali canon was written in Sri Lanka, right? I mean, it was inscribed in Sri Lanka.
I think Sanskrit was used by the Brahmana caste because they are well educated, and Pali is for general public. That's why the Buddha used the Pali language.
No, I mean, Sanskrit was a later creation. It's an artificial language. No one ever spoke Sanskrit. It was just an artificially created by the grammars to be perfect. But no one ever spoke it. And anyway, not really important. It is kind of nice to use the Sanskrit because of how perfect it is. Pali, if you study them both, you'll see that Sanskrit is more perfect in the sense of not blurring the actual forms of the words. Like Nibbana should be Nirvana if you want to keep it in its original form, Nir and Vana. But in Pali, Nir and Vana become Nibbana, kind of thing. So Pali loses some of that form. I think it's more beautiful. Sanskrit is very harsh and difficult. It's really jarring at times to say things like kshatriya, for example.
So does Pali sound nicer, but Sanskrit is nicer in its form, written form?
I mean, nicer, of course, is subjective. It's Pali is easier to say. I think that's objective. Sanskrit is more difficult to speak. But Sanskrit is more clear in terms of the meaning of the words, because nothing's been, or less has been removed. It isn't blurred like Pali to make it sound nicer. Sound, right, easier to say, more harmonic, whatever you want to put. Okay, anyway, these two made an end to their time. They died, and then we have the final sentence. Okay, the subject of this sentence is neuter. The subject of this sentence is Sabampi Vibhavang. Let's see, what is Sabba? We know what Sabba means, all. It's an adjective that describes Vibhava. Vibhava means affluence. Right? Vibhava, Bhava means something that is, I guess, in this case. Vibhava means, it's just a word that means that which, it's kind of implies sort of a special thing, you know, so it's referring to wealth, someone's wealth. Vi is here special. Vibhava means something that someone has that is special or that is worth, valuable. You know, all the valuables are all their wealth. Here means all their wealth. Bi is just the emphatic participle. It means whatever you want it to mean, indeed or absolutely all of their wealth. You know. So that the implied there, whose wealth it was, is in the previous sentence. It's the mother and father's wealth because they just died, right? So the question is, who gets their wealth? Vicharingsu. Vicharingsu is the verb. It's past tense, ingsu. So it's why is it plural? Right. This is, I think my translation is incorrect, it's imprecise. Vicharingsu means they. So the they, the in the Thai books it explains what this means. Vicharingsu means they distributed. And I was confused by this when I did my first translation. I couldn't figure out I thought it meant that it was going, it was being distributed to others because we got a plural here. Why are other people distributing? But the Thai translation says that the relatives of or the people, whoever it would be responsible for this unnamed, unspecified group of people distributed the wealth, the entire wealth of those two, mother and father, itare. And here we have the kind of sandhi where you add a letter. So this itare yewa, the ya there, the letter y, is meaningless. It's been added to separate itara from ewa. Ewa is an emphatic participle. Doesn't really mean anything here, but it kind of gives emphasis somehow. Itara means others. Itare is plural. So this is a tutu form. It's the object of the sentence, the object of the verb. Who did they distribute it to? And it's plural. So distribute it to the others. And this could mean, you know, if you didn't really think of the context, it could mean that it was given to other people, which is how I originally translated this. I thought, oh, why are they giving all the wealth to other people? It's like these two were without wealth. But no, it was given to the other two, the other two being the two kids. So all of the wealth was given to the others. Or maybe that's what the ewa means. So it's given to those very others, meaning the two sons. That's a difficult one. As obviously the parents didn't do the distributing, so why is this a plural? We have it plural because it's other people distributing all of the wealth of the mother and father, even though we don't say, it doesn't say that, it just says all the wealth. Sabampi wibawam. So that all of that wealth was distributed indeed, verily, to the others, being the two sons. Itara means other. Itare is tutu, means the others. It's the object. So how was that?
Mante vibhavam means distributing or getting rid of.
Vibhava is the object of the sentence. Oh no, is the subject of this sentence. It's the wealth or affluence.
Oh, okay. Because I was thinking like vibhava tanha.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think it's just one of those inexplicable words that just means wealth, even though it's hard to explain why. See, the prefix vi has different meanings. It has very disparate meanings, meaning it means very different things. So like vipassana vi means special, or vibhava means vi there means something totally different. Vi there means out or not. It's a negative. Or vitarago, right? Someone who has taken out raga, taken raga out is vi.
Oh, vitaka.
Vitaka, not sure what the vi means there exactly. But yeah, vi has very disparate meanings, different meanings. Broad means different things. Here it, I think, means just the things that were, because bhava is becoming or being, right? So it's referring to things that exist that are special. So that's what I was trying to derive it from. But the meaning in the dictionary is, I believe, wealth or affluence, belongings, all of the wealth of these people who died.
I see.
Sabampi vibhavang means all of their wealth. The pi on the end of the sabang is just an emphatic. It's a nipata that we just studied last week. Okay, so that's all for this week. Any questions?
I'm just happy because the first word of the next paragraph actually looks familiar. 7-1 form of ta.
Awesome. Well done. Which brings me to your homework. The homework will be, what have we done? We've done purisa, kanya, and kula, right?
Yes.
Okay, so let's do muni, rati, and what's aki, right? And do the eat forms of the three nouns. Eat masculine, eat feminine, and eat neuter.
Sounds good. Thank you, Bhante. Sadhu.
Sadhu, Bhante.
Sadhu, Bhante.
Sadhu, Bhante.
Okay, see you all next week.
See you next week. Thank you.